And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is what it takes to move forward. Each of my guests is explaining how we can move forward towards what we want. My next guest is an internationally respected authority in economics, finance, and corporate leadership. He also understands politics, having campaigned twice for the Republican nomination for the presidency. We'll discuss national events as economics and politics collide in Washington, D.C. this week. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Steve Forbes is an editor, publisher, and a businessman. He's the chairman and editor-in-chief of Forbes Media, which includes Forbes Business Magazine. Steve was the Republican candidate for the U.S. presidential primaries in 1996 and 2000. He's the son of longtime Forbes magazine publisher Malcolm Forbes and the grandson of the publication's founder, B.C. Forbes. Steve is also a member of the Board of Trustees at the Heritage Foundation, an influential Washington, D.C.-based public research institute. He's a frequent panelist on television programs Forbes on Fox, which also features members of the Forbes magazine staff and is shown Saturday mornings on Fox News Channel at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. Welcome to the show, Steve. How are you doing today?
To be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you as well. First order of business, though, before we jump into the interview, a belated happy birthday to you. I know this is your birthday week, so congratulations to you on that. Many happy returns.
Yeah. Thank you. As my father liked to say, consider the alternative, so I'm very happy.
It does beat the alternative. That is true. Well, let's dive into it, because so much is going on right now in Washington, D.C. that affects Wall Street and Main Street. And, of course, the big news story out there is the battle going on in Congress over raising the debt ceiling and the spending and increasing taxes. So the deadline's approaching. It's August the 2nd. How do you see this situation playing out? Is this just a tempest in a teapot, or is this really a looming catastrophe for us?
Well, they're not going to let the catastrophe happen, because neither party knows what the result would be. So it's like a mutually assured destruction. You're not going to pull the trigger. What I think they will do at the end of the day is, after a lot of hoopla, is agree to something that the Republicans have negotiated with Vice President Biden, of cuts of $1.5 trillion on paper, and I emphasize on paper, and then raise the debt ceiling and revisit the issue with promises of all sorts of wonderful reforms and Viagra and everything else 6 to 9 months from now. But I don't think it's realistic to expect they're going to redo a 10-million-word tax code in the next few hours, or restructure entitlements like Medicare and Social Security in a few days, even though there's talk of making some changes on that. They might try it, but I don't think the time is there for it. What this underscores, Billy, is the lack of leadership from the president. If he had come up with a Gang of Six kind of proposal 3 or 4 months ago and said, let's sit down and see if we can flush something out, they'd have had something by now, instead of a 3 or 4 page summary, which anyone could do on the back of an envelope these days.
Well, it's true. We're in the 11th hour, and it is late to begin preparing for something like this, because legislation takes time. But let's play it out if you're exactly right, and I believe we are headed in that direction. So we get some tax cuts. We get the debt ceilings increased. What does that mean for Wall Street? How's business going to respond to that?
I think Wall Street has already concluded that we're not going to go over the precipice. I think they're more worried about something going wrong in Europe, where they're now kicking the can down the road again. But the Greek situation is still, Greece is still buried in debt. There's no way that even with this temporary and small restructuring, they're going to be able to get out from under. So I think that's going to weigh on the markets more than a short-term deal from Wall Street. And as for the rating agencies, I think the market is pretty much ignoring them. If people really thought there was going to be a default or a major delay, in terms of the government paying its bills, you'd have seen reflected in the markets now.
Very true. And yesterday's 150-point gain would indicate that Wall Street does have some confidence about that. My guest is Steve Forbes. So, Steve, let's bring it on down for my listeners who may have money in the markets, and most of us do, either directly or through our 401k programs. Give us some investment advice. You know, what should an investor be doing or not doing as Congress approaches the August the 2nd debt ceiling limit issue?
Well, assuming they get this debt issue out of the way, people should be grateful if Congress takes a recess, which means their ability to harm the country is temporarily in abeyance. And in terms of the market itself, don't try to be a market timer. The country's going through a rough period right now, a very dangerous period, but being able to get in and out of the market on a timing basis is really a fool's game, which is why mutual funds, as we know, lag the general market. And individuals, when they try to manage their, even when they go in and out of funds, when they invest in funds, lag funds performance. Why? Because they get whipsawed. They go in at the wrong time, get out at the wrong time. And then, in other words, don't let emotions be your enemy. If you don't need the retirement money right away, ride this storm through. We're going to come out of it, and I think after 2012, we are going to get the kind of reforms that Ronald Reagan introduced 30 years ago when the country looked like it was in a hopeless malaise.
Well, I certainly hope you're right, and as you know from personal experience, you're broadcasting into Reagan country because this is Ventura County is the home to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. So my guest is Steve Forbes, and Steve, I'm going to change gears on you if I can, please. It's the first anniversary of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act that happened this week. And first question for you, do you think the Congress passed it on the same week as your birthday out of spite, or was this just a coincidence?
I would like to think it was out of spite, but I think that would be overrating my influence or any individual citizen's influence.
Well,
no, I think it was just Congress in its one of its major bouts of stupidity, writing a 2,000-plus page bill, which did nothing to rectify what caused the crisis, which was a weak dollar. They ignored that. Fannie and Freddie, they ignored that. They ignored a few other things and instead piled on massive regulations, which are going to be hurting banks. And so, and they also, contrary to what they said, they perpetuate the too big to fail doctrine. In fact, they almost made it in the, put it in the law code.
Well, talk to us about that. How is this going to come back to affect us as consumers? Because I happen to agree with you.
What it does, as you know, is it allows the government or regulators to designate entities that have posed systemic risk, which means you're big enough to bring the system down, and which means that if a entity gets in trouble, the government has the power to take you over. But it also means that no regulator is going to acknowledge publicly that they screwed up. And suddenly a company gets in trouble, which they say poses systemic risk. It means the regulators are asleep at the switch. So what are they going to do? They're going to bail the thing out. They're not going to let a failure, big failure, happen on their watch. So politically, it means too big to fail is now enshrined in the federal tax, the federal law code, which is rather bizarre.
Well, not only bizarre, but also potentially dangerous down the road as we go. Well, let me ask you this.
You see it in the interest rates. Companies that are seen as posing systemic risk in the eyes of regulators, their borrowing costs are less than those of everyone else. Why? Because at the end of the day, they figure, ain't going to let them fail.
That's true. Well, I'm glad you brought up interest rates because that's truly one of the underreported stories right now, and that's the delicate balance between these low interest rates that the Fed is pursuing as a policy, our weak dollar, and the unemployment figures, which have actually gone up from 8.5% back in 2008 to where we are today at 9.2%. So discuss the relationship between the Fed's policy of low interest rates, our weak dollar, and this rising 9.2% unemployment rate.
Well, whenever a central bank, particularly one as important as the Fed, because the U.S. is the premier economy of the world, trashes its money, bad things happen. You get arbitrary winners, arbitrary losers. You punish productive investment. You encourage speculation in currencies and commodities. private capital is fleeing this country, and if you don't know what you're going to be paid back in, no surprise that the level of investment goes down. And so that's one key reason why this recovery has been so weak. It would be, imagine what your life would be like, organizing your life, what our standard of living would be, if you changed the minutes in an hour each day. If you didn't have 60 minutes in an hour, you didn't know whether you had an 80-minute hour or 20-minute hour, just would make life infinitely more complicated. Let's make it even simpler. Imagine if every state in this union had its own dollar currency. Imagine how chaotic that would be.
Yes.
My God.
Yeah. Well, it's true, but the
dollar, I might rather prefer a Mexican peso. Thank you very much.
My guest is Steve Forbes, who is proponent of the Mexican peso. But, Steve, let me ask you this, because Ben Bernanke is on record as saying we're going to keep the interest rates low in order to stimulate employment. We have not seen that. Where's the fault in his logic there?
Well, you don't stimulate employment by trashing money and manipulating the price of money. What he's done is make money very cheap for the government, which needs globs of it. Very cheap for large companies. You know, about 8 or 9 months ago, I think Microsoft had a 3-year bond issue at 0.875%. But small businesses, when they want to borrow, they pay a lot. And those people, folks, are trying to get mortgages. Yes, the rates are low, but very, very difficult to do. So in the real world, you make it expensive for those who create the jobs and cheap for those who have good balance sheets anyway, or the government, which we shouldn't be making the government even more addicted to debt.
Without a doubt. That makes sense. My guest is Steve Forbes. Steve, help me to understand something, because there are a lot of complaints on Wall Street about President Obama and his policies towards business. You mentioned Dodd-Frank. There's Obamacare, the talk about repealing the Bush tax cuts, et cetera, et cetera. Yet with all of this complaining, the campaign finance figures just came out this week, and it shows that Wall Street is investing very heavily in President Obama's reelection campaign. In fact, he's way ahead of the dollars that he had collected at this point in time in the 2008 campaign. So even though Wall Street is complaining very vigorously, what do these contributions to reelect the president tell us? What story are we actually seeing here?
It's called hedge your bets. This time in the race 4 years ago, Obama was seen as a nice guy, but not going very far. It was seen as Hillary Clinton's to lose. Maybe John Edwards would give her a good run in Iowa. Remember that name?
Yes, I do.
The idea that a junior senator from Illinois was going to win the nomination was seen as preposterous. Maybe he could be VP candidate. Maybe he could run in 8 years from now and become president. But that's why he didn't get much money at this point. Once he became seen as a top-tier candidate who could actually win the thing, well, then the checkbooks opened up. So it's hedging your bets. Vegas does it. Wall Street does it, too.
So there's no difference between Vegas and Wall Street when it comes to that. Well, as a man who's run for president twice, and you've got your finger on the pulse of politics in this country, first of all, I want to ask you about the Tea Party movement, because that gained a lot of steam in the midterm elections, a lot of visibility. So in what ways is the Tea Party movement good for America and for business, and in what ways has it been bad for America and business?
Well, it's been very positive in that it re-energized the Republican Party. It energized a lot of opposition to this binge spending, to these massive regulations that have come from Obamacare and from Dodd-Frank bill. And it was a grassroots movement. Nobody organized it. It's still unorganized today. You have numerous Tea Party groups. But these folks go out and do things on their own, which is why it's become so powerful. And it's had an impact. Late last year, the Obama administration tried to rush through in the waning days of the last Congress another stimulus bill, and as well as raising taxes on the so-called rich. But because of the Tea Party movement, even Democrats had to stiffen their spine and said no. So President Obama agreed to extend the Bush tax rates for 2 years. He's trying to pull back on that, but he had agreed to it. And so the reason why you haven't had a big tax increase in this debt ceiling debate is precisely because Republican members, particularly the House, know that if they stray and vote for increased taxes, they're going to face a fierce primary opponent next year, guaranteed.
Well, let's do focus our attention to next year. I mean, and look at the Tea Party. What impact will they have in 2012? You mentioned it yourself. This is a very diverse group. It's very diffused, decentralized. Does the Tea Party really have a strong, loyal following, or is it just a mile wide and about an inch deep in terms of their support?
Well, their support is critical because these people are become activists. They were not activists before, most of them, but they've certainly gotten involved now. So even though nobody's directing them, all the Republican candidates know they better not diss these folks. Even if you don't get there a lot of people with Tea Party support, you better not get in their crosshairs where they become against you rather than just saying, well, I prefer somebody else, but not get mad at you. So they're going to have a big influence. And Washington will complain because they don't like actual people getting involved in the process, and because these folks don't buy into the conventional wisdom.
And that is very true. In what way, Steve, is the Tea Party movement different from the Moral Majority back in 1994 when we had the midterm elections back then, or even going back to the Reagan administration? In what ways is the Tea Party different from the Moral Majority?
The Tea Party was activated by what they thought was a trampling of the Constitution, binge spending on a scale we've never seen in except for World War II, massive encroachment on freedom, tearing up of contracts like we're Argentina or some fourth world nation. And so was seeing their opportunities for the future, economic opportunities for the future, go up literally in cheap money and smoke and rising taxes. So they said, enough, we're not going to stand for it.
Well, let me change gears. My guest is Steve Forbes. And, Steve, I want to change gears, talk a little bit about taxes because you brought that up in an earlier answer. And I'm going to use the words of the former White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, who said that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We've got a crisis going on right now. It is the perfect open door for tax policy reform at this point. I know that they're talking about it. You yourself said there's not enough time to do anything significant about it today. But looking after the election of 2012, are we going to see major tax reform? And you're a big proponent of the flat tax. Do you foresee a flat tax or even a value-added tax coming into play after 2012?
I think there's going to be major tax reform because there'll be a mandate for it. Eventually, the Republican candidates, the smart ones, will learn to advocate it and bring it up forthrightly instead of being passive about it. And so there will be a mandate. And after the elections, there'll be a different Senate. And the House, I think, will remain in conservative hands. And with a new president, I think you will get major reform. And the flat tax, I think, will have a chance of enactment. 26 countries have done it, all of them successfully. And I think we'll get a positive flat tax. You know, the Obama administration, comedians have pointed out, their version of a flat tax is line one, what did you make? Line two, send it in. we're talking about a positive flat tax.
I agree. And I think it should be mentioned, you sort of passed over it in brief, but actual tax receipts, tax revenues coming into the governments that have enacted a flat tax increase after the flat tax is enacted. And certainly our government could use some money coming in as well. So there's more impetus there.
Money coming in from economic growth rather than squeezing and punishing our citizenry.
And that is the way that it should be. My guest has been Steve Forbes, who is the editor-in-chief and chairman and editor-in-chief of Forbes Media. Steve, thank you so much for being my special guest. Before I let you go, if people are interested, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the magazine, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, they could go to startwithforbes.com. It's a great website, lots and lots of good stuff there. And they go there and they can spend a lot of time getting a lot of good material.
And they can
Free.
Also and they can also see you on Fox News on the weekends, isn't that correct?
Right.
Good enough.
Right.
Steve, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Look forward to it.
Thank you. Take care.